you have questions or comments or thoughts or where we should go from here, because we can obviously talk forever about this. So what would you like me to say next? What are your protestations? Any thoughts or comments?
I have
Patricia.
Oui.
Patricia. What do you, how do you pronounce your name? Patricia?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
You feel fear for things that you normally don't have, or you don't feel that you have full control.
You don't have control? Yes, there you have it, don't you?
However, yes. however, and you want to control.
Yes.
However, sometimes that fears or that situations in your life are meant to teach you something.
Right. Yes. I mean, we're always, everything is for the expansion of consciousness. The whole story of the entire planet is for the individual expansion of consciousness. That's the only reason that you incarnated, and that's the only reason that the world exists, is because that is the drama of creation. The drama of creation is that it's all Satchitanandam, and the highest duty is to realize ourselves as expression of Satchitanandam. And that's all that we're really doing. Now, let me explain to you what that means. That means all we ever experience is consciousness. Right now, we're talking about the consciousness of fear. Certain events of our lives bring us into a state of fear, and then our consciousness becomes fear. Other experiences of our lives bring us into a state of happiness, and our consciousness becomes happiness. Now, the scriptures and the saints and masters all declare that even though we oscillate among these many different experiences in the course of a day, what to speak of a lifetime, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, then it's bad, 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 then it's good, and then it's really, really wonderful, and then it's bad again. So it's really waves like this, right? Whether it's tiny little minutia of anxieties and successes or longer rhythms, it's waves. Now, the majority of people believe that because it's waves, what we should try to do is we should just try to get on one of the upper waves and then hold it, right? Because we think that's how we're going to feel better. And the difficulty is that everything in life is dual. And if you look at life, if you become thoughtful and not merely just superficial, you will notice that no matter what you get going, eventually it turns into something else. Because it simply does. I was so touched when I married David and I met his parents for the first time. And both his parents are passed away. He was not particularly close to his parents, but they were good parents and they treated him well. His mother, who was very minimalist in her house, she was not a keeper of things. She had pictures of her three children and she had them up in a prominent place in the house. And they were portraits that were taken when the children were about 7 or 8 years old. And she had these beautiful portraits, and I sort of looked around and there were no portraits of David as a grown man. And then finally there was one little one over here somewhere, because that was what she had. She had those three kids, she raised them, and then they morphed into these something else. You know, my father said to me with tears in his eyes, the child disappears into the grown-up. So it was wonderful. You know, she loved raising her children, she had a marvelous time. So she got one of those waves and she was holding it. So, you know, she had two more kids, but eventually it turned into adults who rarely called her. So most people think that you just grab that wave, or like one of my relatives said to me, well, that's why it's important to keep on wanting new things. You just keep finding another wave and another wave and another wave, but sooner or later, if you pay the slightest bit of attention, you just begin to realize that it's not the specifics, it's the pattern. So if you begin thinking deeply, which only a fraction of people on the planet, a tiny fraction do, you begin to wonder, is it only waves? And you become more sensitive to the fact that these waves emanate from something, don't they? In order to have waves, you also have to have an ocean. And you can have a very, very deep ocean in which these are very superficial. I've done a little tiny bit of scuba diving, which is a remarkable thing to do, because no matter what's happening on the surface, you go down. And then there's this enormous universe down there. It's completely unrelated. I remember coming up once and it was a thunderstorm on the surface. And there'd been no hint of it down below. You know, and then you come up in all these oscillating waves, but it wasn't under there. Now, that's the ocean is often the image of consciousness. So at what point do we decide? It's not the problem with this wave or that wave or this wave or that wave. The problem is that you can't hold the wave. And so we try to go deeper into our own consciousness, deeper into the meaning of life, deeper into even what am I doing? Okay, I raised my children and I loved it, but what did I really love? Those three children, or selflessness, service, lighthearted happiness, a sense of belonging, you know, like what was it that I really loved? And then you go out and you find a way to express what it was that you really enjoyed instead of just trying to hold on to that wave. You see, the purpose of life is to realize that there is this underlying current of bliss. And what makes it much worse is this planet will never, ever, ever get itself organized, because what would be the point? Oh, look, this is a planet in which all the waves stay up. And we all just get to sit on up waves and nothing ever happens. Like, first of all, it's impossible. And secondly, like, where would that take us? We would just become like toads, you know, just like comfortable eating our flies on our lily pad. Where would the expansion of consciousness come? And the suffering is because we have such a false idea. So many things are happening in this world. I mean, a friend of ours is from Iran, you know, and all her family's in Iran. And they're all, I don't watch the news as a rule, so I don't know what's happening right now, but you know, she was on the phone and on the email with her family, and they're all just, you know, in their apartments with their doors closed because they just don't know what's going to happen. And naturally, she's concerned about them, but I mean, that's just one small example. People's countries and homelands are just going to pieces left and right. It is out of our control, but you know, we're only identified with these things for a short period of time. When the body dies, all of it goes away. What is really happening on this planet? Now, I think I lost the point of your question, but that was the thoughts that occurred to me when you asked it, so perhaps you should ask it again, because I wasn't really quite sure where we went.
Control.
Just but control. But
you fear what you don't have control over.
Well, honey, the fact of the matter is you have control over pretty much nothing. So you can spend a whole lot of your life trying to gain control over more on the illusion that that'll save you, or you can recognize, I have control over nothing. The only thing I have control over is my inner relationship to what's going on outside of me. So instead of spending all our energy trying to make everything outside the right size so we're not afraid of it, we start developing our inner capacity to cope. And those become the generic qualities, and the fundamental rule of that is you have to have some basis for relating to life. You can't just sit there and wait. You have to explore that ocean. You explore that ocean through self-understanding. You explore that ocean through devotion and prayer. You explore that ocean through energization and learning to be able to channel energy. You explore that ocean by tuning into a more and more refined level of this planet. You know, there's many things. We were just talking a little about Michael Jackson, of whom I'm no great fan, but he was very, very popular, but man, his so-called music was hysterical. I mean, it wasn't music, it was just hysteria. You know, like this jump, like this stuff. I mean, he was remarkable, absolutely remarkable in what he could do. But like, how can you live like that? Where is that going to take you? If all your responses to life are just screaming and running and moving and being very sensual and like this and... then what happens? And so people come here and they hear us singing, door of my heart, open wide, I keep for thee. You know, and at first glance you think, this is no answer. But if you really put energy into it, you begin to realize, oh, I see, this is taking me really deep into myself. And then no matter what happens around me, I stand within that. And then the waves come, the storms come. In fact, all that screaming stuff comes. You're just, you know, you deal with it. You reach out, you deal with it. You can even react quickly and powerfully, but you're reacting from the depth of the ocean. But if you don't cultivate that depth, if you don't base your courage on your experience of that depth, you will always be afraid. And I'm just being honest with you, you will always be afraid. So, I mean, to come to your specific question, the very thing that will help you to conquer the fear is to say, I'm going to go deeper into what's going to make me strong in my inner self. And, you know, where you have this relationship with the guru, we seem to have a church and a temple here, and we have these practices, we seem to have all this stuff going on, but it's not really happening there. It's a way of presenting to people the possibility that you can become strong inside yourself. That's why these 7 points are so incredible. You know, we believe that this Satchitananda pervades the entire universe. It predates, it's before creation. And our highest duty is to realize ourselves as an expression of that. I mean, you know, this is like what the church is based on. We believe in inward communion. We believe in serving others. We believe in recognizing the unity of, with all peoples. That's not about anybody except you and your ability to go to the basis, the point beyond fear. And anything else will serve you for a little while. Maybe even a whole incarnation. But it won't really serve you, because underneath it, you'll still know that you're vulnerable. You'll just still know. So might as well cut to the chase. Does that make sense? Yeah. And you know, we keep justifying the way we feel. But. After a while, we have to just say, but nothing. Just the way it is, yes.
Yes, but what happens, for example, when you jump into the pool or the ocean and go deep and try to find actually what is meant to be taught?
Mm-hmm. But you know, sometimes the lessons are not clear, Patricia.
That's the point.
Very often the lessons are not clear.
And then you say, what I am meant to learn.
Well, often what you're meant to learn is that you don't always know what you're meant to learn. And I think people's thought of, oh, I'll just figure this out. See, that's another one of those little delusions, to say, I figured this out and I know what I'm supposed to learn. That's just another way of controlling it. Mm-hmm. Often you have no idea what you're supposed to learn. How would you know? How would you have the intelligence to even know what you don't know? Swamiji was commenting recently about Catholic confession and the limitations of it. He said one of the main limitations is that people often have no idea what their actual faults are. They have no idea what their actual sins are. They don't have the perspective to see them. So they make an announcement about what their sins are, but it might not even really be the real thing that's holding you back. That's why, may the divine light awaken and purify my heart. You're just accepting the fact that self-evidently there are areas of myself that are not illuminated by the light, and I invite the light to come in and illuminate them. And in the hour that you need it, it will be given to you. Many people say, oh, if I just understood, then I'd be fine. I think demanding to understand and saying I'd be courageous if I just understood is just another way of avoiding just doing what you have to do. But if you don't understand, that's part of what's happening. You know, in our Festival of Light, which not all of you have heard as many times as I've heard it, but there's this little section, and you have this little bird, and this bird is having this little experience, and the bird represents the soul's long journey from ignorance to enlightenment. And at a certain point, the bird is flying with its own power, and then it starts getting battered by the wind. And so it says, help, help! And the wind says, surrender to the wind, you know, ride the breeze of life. And so after a time, the tiny rebel surrenders to the power of the wind, and it finds itself being lifted. In other words, it's accepting what life is giving it, and it's flowing like a surfer on a surfboard instead of demanding that the waves meet its criteria. But then night falls, and then the bird says, how can I fly in this darkness? And that one is very subtle, because what it's actually saying is, as long as I can see where I'm going and I know what's happening, I'm fine. But now the night has fallen. And so then the bird protests, but I need to know. And we even persuade ourselves that this is a good thing. Of course I need to know. It's obvious I need to know, isn't it? I want to understand the lesson. And so we spend months, years, demanding to understand the lesson and don't realize that that's just the ego's, that's another way that the ego has of just keeping us from actually entering into the great flow. And the night says, surrender to me. Peace awaits you in the unknown. And now that's a very powerful, you know. In other words, how can we know everything now? I when I was at a point where I had to make some really serious decisions and I didn't know how to make them, I said, look, the reason that I can't make these decisions is because I don't have the intuition or the clarity to make them. And I keep saying if I demand intuition and clarity so that I can make these decisions, but I don't have it. So I need to do things that will help develop my intuition and my clarity. In other words, I just need to go over here and do what I can do. In that case, it was study, sadhana, satsang, get deeper spiritually. And then I did, without ever knowing what this was. It just fuddled over here. And then one day, I just looked over at it, and I had changed my consciousness. Oh, of course, that's what should happen. But if I had sat there and demanded that I understand it, and then I would do all these other things. I must know that I have the courage to be able to do this. I must know that I will succeed before I do it. Of course, I don't know whether I'm going to succeed or not because I don't have the intuition and clarity to know that. But I'm not going to do anything until I know. It's a very clever self-justification for staying exactly as we are, which is really what the, you know, what we're trying to accomplish anyway, which is to face nothing and do nothing. And then we lay over it all this, oh, I'm worried about the world, I'm worried about my family, I'm worried about this, I just can't deal with that because I have to worry about this, and I have to process this, I have to grieve that. I don't mean to be too rude, but really, a lot of that is just, I get to stay exactly where I am. And I'm going to lay over it all these words that sound so good, rather than actually do something to expand my consciousness. But and so if you're failing in one area, if you just can't cope, just cheerfully say, I just can't deal with that. I turned off the television. I mean, not that I'm a big television watcher, but I extricated myself from the news recently. I mean, I used to try to keep up a little bit just because I felt I ought to. I finally decided, this is just like, I feel really depressed. I don't like any of this. It's making me very nervous. So I just stopped watching. And I'm much more cheerful, and I don't think it makes a whit of difference. I'm not making any different decisions, and I honestly don't think Obama's waiting to hear from me. And I mean, because it was disturbing my peace and making me anxious. So I just stopped listening. And you know, you find out anyway. So you have to go where the energy is flowing. You have to be like, you have to find a channel where the energy will keep going and then keep going. And don't worry about where it's blocked. Just move where you can move. Because if energy flows somewhere, this is like a difference in the way people think. Swami Kriyananda has trained us and works with people at Ananda to go with your strengths. People imagine that you have to go with your weaknesses. If I'm bad at something, if I'm afraid of something, I have to just sit there and beat my head against it. His it's just the opposite. You go where the energy is flowing, and then where the energy is flowing, you begin to expand, and then that expansion gives you the courage. Either everything gets swept along in the tide, or your intuition and clarity gets better, and then when you turn back to it, you can deal with it. I had a very difficult relationship, and I managed to extricate myself from it, and I said something, well, I hope that karma's over. And Swami sort of sweetly said, I don't think so. He said, but you've gone as far as you can go with it now. He said, so you have to grow in other ways. And then when you're bigger, you can come back and deal with it again. Don't worry, you'll get to deal with it. Instead of just hammering my head against it and just sinking lower and lower. So we just go with where the energy flows. And it's contrary to popular ways of doing things, but it actually works 100 times better. It's the whole secret of Ananda's success. Go with your strengths. Go where the energy's going. We often say, what's trying to happen? You know, where is the energy flowing? Does that make sense? Yes, Sharon.
It's like there's kind of a combination between, I don't know, the way I'm digesting what you're saying is, you know, to take these, you know, these steps, why would you be so anxious about this goal when you haven't even done step one?
Well, that's another way to say it.
And so to kind of focus on these steps, but, you know, and then sometimes it's also nice to visualize this goal.
Right. You know, people say that it is, but I'm not entirely sure that it is. But go on, Sharon, with what you're...
I don't know. Yeah, that's what I was just wondering. I mean, so I think that's interesting. I didn't know if you... I was wondering.
I've seen that people tend to visualize their goals, but they don't visualize what they actually need to do. They imagine that if they visualize their goals, that's actually the same as working to attain them. There's a lot of teaching that is garbled. It's not entirely false, but it's garbled. The way Swamiji talks about it is you clearly visualize the energy you want to experience or the energy you want to make your own, and then you begin to manifest that energy. So let's say you want to be, you imagine yourself or you feel that you're destined to be a healer of some kind. So people will tell me, well, I know that my destiny is to be a healer. Well, I say, well, what are you doing? Are you studying any healing modalities? Are you even helpful to the people around you? Well, no, I just visualize myself as a healer. Well, maybe you should be helpful to someone. In other words, what does that mean to you to be a healer? If it means that you're someone who's able to really give to people what they really need, well, what are you waiting for? And so it's not so much that you don't know where you're going, but too often this visualizing of some goal is a substitute for grounding our lives in actual present-day expression of whatever that means to you. And you just don't get to there from here without actually beginning to get in tune with what it is that you want. If I want to have the clarity and intuition to understand my life, I need to start working on clarity and intuition. I need to not just visualize myself as being clear and intuitive. I have to also... I personally, and this is partly just my own prejudice about these things, I'm not much at visualizing the end result. I found that visualizing the end result confuses me more than not. But I visualize really clearly what the energy should be like right now. And I begin to act according to that energy. And then I find that it just takes me where we're trying to go. And often, when I see where we're trying to go, I don't know how to get there, but I know how to get there now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I had another question about if you do feel like you're being held back in some way from making a decision or starting a path or something like that, and you think it's because of a fear, or
right.
You're not really sure, is that something that you should try to delve into and try to, like, what is it? What is it that's holding you back? What am I afraid of? To try to, like, figure out, you know, maybe look at what the background is or what your, you know, what was role modeled for you or your environment, you know.
I think it's important to know what I would say is, I think it's important to know where your pain is coming from. You know, if one is unconscious of what one's actual motivations are, if one thinks that the people in your life are being unfair and unkind to you when in fact they're being quite reasonable, but the problem was some unresolved issue way in the past that you just, and so you don't really know where your pain is coming from. I think then it's helpful to do enough introspection or counseling or whatever is required to get into some honest relationship with what actually motivates you. But once you have some basic idea of what motivates you, I don't think you resolve those issues just by continuing to analyze them. You generally resolve them by starting in a new direction and having a new set of experiences that lift your consciousness above the level of where these were happening, and then you see them from a different perspective. So I would say the answer to that question is somewhat personal and would best be resolved in a private conversation about where, you know, and the other side, the way you can tell, is does it actually free and move energy forward? if the effort to understand just puts you in a whirlpool that just goes on and on, often it's just time to say, it's not important why I'm afraid. The only thing that matters is that I do something now. Because if I do something, I create an experience that tells me I don't have to be afraid. But then it's important to take an experience on a practical level that will actually work. And again, this is what I see. People will say, I should quit my job and go off and live in the country in watercolor because I know I'm supposed to be an artist. And of course, they can't quit their job. The whole dynamic of it is so far beyond them. But that people will set up, and I'm not speaking personally, Sharon, because I don't know, but people will set up an impossible polarity, which is either I continue in my job right now and never realize my dream as an artist, or else I jettison everything and go off and paint. Where the actual thing is like, let's go to Foothill and take a watercolor class. You know, let's join a Saturday painting group. And let's just start doing something. I'm going to be a healer. Well, gee, you're not even nice to your cat. You know, start taking care of your cat. So often fear, in order to hold us, sets up an impossible dynamic. And it's far better to actually do a very small thing than to constantly imagine the big thing you should do. And if contemplating why you're afraid keeps you stuck, then just put it on the shelf and just find. Swami Kriyananda's genius as a leader has been that he's always able to recommend to people something they can actually do, no matter how small. He's just able to sort of look at a person and figure out where they could go forward. You know? And maybe it's just like, why don't you just walk to work instead of driving your car? You know, why don't you have a vegetarian lunch? It can seem small, and then the person, the ego, just wants to dismiss it as insignificant. But one small gesture actually carried out can be infinitely more powerful than the biggest gesture never acted upon, which then also becomes the symbol of your failure. Yogananda said, above all, it's important to maintain a self-image as a person who can succeed. And he said, if you are facing challenges, I love this, that are bigger than you can cope with, run away from them, rather than continually failing. And find something that you can actually do so you can maintain your sense of self as a person who can succeed. I may not be able to quit my job and go be an artist, but you know what? I can go to the gym 3 times a week. But then you start going to the gym 3 times a week, or you start going to your Saturday afternoon painting class. And all of a sudden, you gradually become a painter. And you start moving where you were trying to get. Do you see what I mean? So the worst thing, above all, is nothing, is to do nothing. Swamiji once said, and it reaches a point where any action, sort of short of absolute madness, is better than doing nothing. I love that. Did you have a thought, Linda?
I was just going to say that I think my problem is kind of along the lines of what Sharon was saying, is that I actually presuppose what the result's going to be or the goal is supposed to be, like you were using the example of being a healer.
Mm-hmm.
So I will conjure up in my mind what that looks like. Where in reality, maybe being a healer is just being present.
Yes.
For the person there in life right then. Maybe that's it. Or maybe it's more, but I get attachments to what I think the outcome should be.
Yes.
And that limits me.
Absolutely.
Because it may be bigger and better.
Well, and more than that, all we're ever actually, form is mutable. You know, you're young today, you're old tomorrow, you're a man this lifetime, you're a woman the next, you're from Venezuela this time, and next time you live in Japan. I mean, you have a job today and you have no job tomorrow, you're healthy today and you're sick the next day. I mean, everything changes. The only thing that doesn't change is your inner consciousness. And so the way Swami Kriyananda has taught us to manifest is to always tune into what the energy is supposed to be like. And if you can feel what the energy is supposed to be like, when I say, I'm going to do that, that's the form. Maybe you're good at creating that form. But then ask yourself, what qualities of energy manifest as that form? And then how can I access those qualities of energy right now? that's the, using the healer is a perfect example, because a healer has this intuitive capacity to give to people what they need for their positive well-being. I'm standing in the drugstore, and there's this most peculiar person who's waiting on me. So I don't have to wait until I have 5 degrees and a job. I can just look at that person and think or pray, Master, what could I give to this person that could help them right now? And then, bingo, you're a healer. And the satisfaction of doing that, the teaching of doing it, the confidence of doing that, begins to move you toward this over here. If you want to be an artist, a painter, you begin to see life in terms of beauty. You begin to make little greeting cards for your friends. You make bookmarks for Christmas presents. And it's not your picture of your life, but you're picking up a brush and creating something beautiful with color. And what is it to be an artist? It's to be able to pick up a brush if you're a painter and you create beautiful things with color. And if it's a canvas that covers a whole wall that somebody pays you $50,000 for, still, you're just picking up a brush and creating beautiful things with color. And until you start doing that, you're never going to be an artist. Do you see what I mean? So if your mind has a tendency to visualize all that, and it really wants to, okay, let it, but then bring it back. Bring it back to this moment, right now. And you'll gradually, the two forces will integrate. But I do feel that there's a certain damage done by the, Swami writes it in one of his books, that people imagine if they visualize it clearly, they've actually done something to accomplish it. And it's not that they haven't, but they haven't done nearly as much as people tell you you've done. Because those people who visualize clearly and then accomplish, as a rule, have worked night and day to accomplish that. And that's the part that's missing. You know, once in a while you have the karma to just win the lottery. But most successful people work night and day for their success. I love people who are always coming to me and telling me that they have a great job that will take hardly any time, that will give them lots of money, and that they'll be able to be very generous with that money, and they'll have all the time in the world to do other things. I think that's wonderful, but I don't think that's possible. You know, we have to put out a lot of energy to get anything back. And if we don't, we don't. Fair enough. Any other thoughts or questions? Sharon, did we finish your story, or shall we go on with it? All right, what else shall we do? Tell me if there's anything more before I go somewhere else on my own with it. All right. Why don't we let's just take a 5-minute break just to stretch for a few minutes, and then we'll come back and do something else for the last half hour, okay? It's not quite 12:30, so don't take such a long break. Just breathe for a minute, and then I wanted to have with all of you, which is, there's a few factors. Fatana and I were speaking, and you know, just about the dilemmas that she's facing right now, and what she was articulating to me was exactly what I was thinking next. Yogananda, I want to just give you a few principles that I think are really important in terms of overcoming fear. Yogananda says environment is stronger than willpower. When I was 18 years old and I read environment is stronger than willpower, I was very rebellious against that thought. I thought, well, I'm a strong person, I can make my own way. I'd always been very much of an individualist. But what I finally have come to understand is that thoughts are a force, and mass consciousness has a real power, and we are very strongly influenced by the soup of consciousness in which we swim. I joke about this, but I think of women's fashions as being just the perfect example of it. From a very young age, I've always tried to stay outside of fashion trends. I've never liked being manipulated. I didn't like the fact, before I knew about secondhand stores, that you could only buy what was in fashion. And certain fashions start, like there was a period of time when big shoes were really, really a fashion. And when fashions start, every woman knows they're ugly. And then after a while, we actually begin to think they're attractive. And I was in some store when the big black shoes were in. I held up these shoes and I said, these are cute, like this. And then I looked at them and I realized, my God, it's happened to me again. Environment is stronger than willpower. This is not cute. This is ugly. But I've looked at it long enough and now I think it's attractive. Now that's a really trivial example, but it's the truth, isn't it? That we get used to things. Now, this whole world, because it happens to be the planet we're living in, is not really, generally speaking, self-realization supportive. It's telling you all the time that matter is reality, sex is the be-all and end-all. If you don't have a partner, you're nothing. If you're not young, and if you have lines on your face, I mean, it just goes on and on. It is not self-realization friendly. And we constantly live in this environment which in subtle and overt ways is taking us away from the simple clarity we receive when you sit in our temple on Sunday morning. And so Yogananda made a tremendous point of what he calls satsang, which is fellowship with truth or fellowship with truth seekers, as being essential on the spiritual path. And if you're trying to overcome fear of anything, you must associate with places, people, and influences that will move you where you're trying to go. That was sort of your question about how much should I delve into what's frightening me? Well, if you just keep the company of your fears, you'll be nothing but your fears. You have to also keep the company of your strengths and your aspirations and your hope. And Fatana was saying, everything's very clear when she comes here. It's only when she leaves that it gets confusing to her. But that's actually the simple truth. That's not anything obscure. That's just saying that when you're in the four walls here and in this place, where there's been this enormous over many years dedication to a particular understanding of the nature of life, it's just more obvious when you're here and when you're in the company of others who think that way. And really, it's very difficult to progress in expanded understanding without keeping the company of those who have it. If you want to be an artist, you find a teacher. If you want to be a pianist, you find a teacher. If you want to learn about nature, you go out into nature. You always look for people who are doing what you're trying to do. If you want to be a spiritually clear person, if you want to be a clear, courageous person, you must associate with people and things that enhance where you're trying to go and avoid, like the plague, those things that take you away. Now, sometimes the things that take you away are your children and your family and your job, you know. So it's not like we have complete mastery over external things, although one should diminish it. You should. But and then you should bring in as much as possible the things that strengthen you. If you go downstairs, there's a whole wall of recordings. There's voice recordings, there's music recordings, there's mantra recordings. And think how many times in our lives we can at least control what we're listening to. You know, now we have these little iPods. You can literally, sometimes I put on my iPod. I don't actually like to do this. But if you put on your iPod when you're traveling, and you are in an entire universe that nobody else is in with you. And you're walking through some crowded worldly place and you're listening to Swami Kriyananda instruct you in the nature of the Bhagavad Gita, or you're listening to some beautiful voice chanting beautiful melodies. Pay attention to your environment. And insofar as you can control it, bring into it those influences that will take you where you are trying to go, and exclude as much as you are able those influences that will take you away. Do not for one second underestimate the importance of that. Don't say, oh, it doesn't matter, I can do this, everybody does that, this is just what they're listening to. Especially sound. Sound is like we are made of sound waves, and you expose yourself constantly to wrong words and wrong music. And, you know, wrong music is like a living nightmare these days. And it just, you begin to vibrate with it. And then you can understand, why am I so nervous? Why am I so afraid? Why am I so full of longing for sensual things? And then you realize you've just been bombarded the whole time. So buy these CDs or go to the websites and fill your resources with things that can help. You can live all by yourself in Timbuktu. And because of the internet these days, you can keep the company of saints. Can keep their photographs, their voices, their music. And then what happens is, you see, it's not that you become weakly dependent on it. It's exactly like learning how to do something. If you're trying to learn the melody of a song and you listen to somebody sing it properly over and over, after a while you can replicate it with your own voice. And so gradually, when you immerse yourself in what you're trying to become, well, what happens? You become that. And, you know, a little tree at the beginning, you have to surround it with a fence and you have to protect it from a squirrel. But in the end, you can tie an elephant to it and the elephant can't pull it down. So you also have to have the self-honesty to simply admit what I'm good and what I'm not good at and how much help I need. And we were also talking about something else. Don't expose yourself to people who won't help you. You know, it's... I was talking to someone recently and he was talking about certain things that his wife is doing and he's not pleased necessarily. I said, she's just your wife. He looked really shocked for a moment. But she's my wife. I said, yeah, she's just your wife. She's not your disciple. She's not your guru. You know, she's just your wife. She's somebody important in your life and you should absolutely befriend and support her, but she's just your wife. You've had billions of wives. You know, you've been billions of wives. You know, these relationships come and go, but our inner consciousness lasts forever. And even out of love for the very people who may be disturbing our peace, the best thing we can do for them is do what we need to do in order to maintain that peace. And if in our efforts to help them, our own peace is disturbed, then pull back until you have more strength. Yogananda said, in every encounter, there's an exchange of magnetism, and the stronger magnetism influences or overcomes the weaker. So just because you think you ought to be able to handle something, you need to be honest enough to ask whether you can or not. And that's why Master says, and you know, I said the word, I'll say it, write it up again, the word is satsang, which is, sat means truth and sang means fellowship. That's why we call Ananda a sangha, Ananda sangha, which means fellowship. And Ananda sangha is a fellowship of bliss, blissful fellowship. That's who we are. The blissful fellowship, because when we're in the company of other people who have an understanding of what we're doing, it's easier to keep it. And if you spend, especially at the beginning, but really all through your life, I don't know how people live all by themselves. You know, you spend a lot of time with people who understand what you're trying to understand, and pretty soon you understand it. And pretty soon you turn from being the one who's always desperately holding on, and you suddenly find yourself giving it to someone else because it's become you. But don't underestimate the necessity. And this is another word that you need to realize. The word is sadhana. Sadhana actually means spiritual practice. You know, it refers to spiritual practices of all kinds. But don't think that the mere thought that I ought to be a certain way is the same as actually accomplishing it. There's Pride and Prejudice, Jane Austen's a wonderful novel, and in one of the old versions of the movie, one of the early ones, which was really good. There's the aunt who's very condescending and just quite impossible. And the girl is playing the piano very beautifully, and then the aunt says, you know, I too could have been a great pianist if I'd ever learned. So don't imagine that you too can be a brave and courageous spiritual person if you never do anything to make it happen. You know, satsang, sadhana. Whether your sadhana is to come here and become a disciple and to take Kriya Yoga and to do formal meditation every day, I mean, great if that's what it is. If your sadhana is simply to try to be a little more conscious than you've been before, a little more self-disciplined, a little more aware of the influences on your life, your sadhana is wherever you're standing in a direction of greater expansion. You know, and there's no right for everybody. Everybody's standing somewhere. We have this little karmic pile, and here we are. And all that you have to do is go forward. And forward, it depends on where you're standing. Forward for you may be backwards for the person in front of you, or sideways for someone else. But you have to do something. And I'm a great believer in aiming small. I don't do well at all with big goals. Some of my friends love big goals. I love really little goals because I love to succeed and I hate to fail. Because when I fail, it has a global effect on me. You know, it tends to go into a certain, I should speak from the past. I had an underlying sense of doom about my life. And so any small failure just, you know, would dive into this great pit and make that pit seem really big. So I began to realize it was extremely important for me to succeed. And so I would make my goals so small. Today, I'm going to do most of the dishes. Look, I did most of the dishes, you know, and then I would feel like a very proud child, but I did most of the dishes. It became, let's see, my spiritual practice was to increase my positive potential. And I just decided to ignore the great pit of negative that was under there. Because if I just gradually increased my positive, what happened was my concept of myself began to shift. So I would say, aim small. Make your sadhana something you can actually do. Keep the company of the truth you're trying to achieve. And I think I had one more point, if I could. Oh, yes, give. The word is seva, and it means service. The best way, really, I mean, about 99% of people's troubles is that they have too much time on their hands, and then they use all that time to worry about themselves. Sometimes when I see people with the problems they present, I think you need a hobby. And above all, you need a hobby that allows you to discover yourself as a giving person. Most of the problem with teenagers especially is, that was one of my perceptions at Stanford, was that nobody ever asked anything of us. We were just like coddled. We were all so full of energy and we had all this idealism. We wanted to do things and we were just expected to sit there and let our parents pay for our lives and do nothing particularly. When I read Swami Kriyananda's theories of education, you know, he said all through the teenage years, people should, the way high school should be run is it should be, they should be out there doing things for other people. They should be acting on their idealisms and they should be giving to others. But the truth is, all of us should be giving to others. If you're afraid of anything, if you allow yourself to be a channel for something that's of benefit to others, or to plants, or to animals, you know, if there's nothing in your life that you're able to give to, you really, and you're filled with fears, start giving something to someone. And this is, again, I haven't gotten past number one. I've gotten lightly into number two. I love this. Satchitananda, which pervades the entire universe, unifying it and all creatures in a bond of mutual service. I just love that. And see, one of the reasons, ways we stop being afraid is we begin to recognize that we are part of a greater reality and that we were bound together in these bonds of mutual service. But if we never give, and all we're asking all the time is, what's coming to me, what's coming to me, what's coming to me, what's coming to me, generally speaking, it won't measure up. But if we're very engaged in some way creatively adding energy, positive energy to the sum total of the planet. And not everyone is people-oriented. And maybe it's through art or something that you do privately, although better if even your creative expression has the intention of uplifting others and not just indulging yourself. And so much of art these days, so-called, is just, well, I think hideous is the word that comes to mind. Demonic might be another word. But it's nice if you use your creative energy to convey something that will lift other people's spirits. That's the real purpose of artistic expression. But keep the company of those people and places and things that have the consciousness you want. Have some specific things that you're doing to transform yourself. Keep your goals small enough to succeed. And try to find a way to give. Because also, as we begin to give, we begin to discover our own self-worth. And as we discover our own self-worth, our anxiety about everything begins to dissipate, because it always comes back to a lack of confidence. Now, any other thoughts or questions or comments? Let me just add one last. This was also from the conversation at the break. A great deal of the time when we project out, what if, and this might happen and that might happen, what we actually lack faith in is we lack faith in ourselves. We lack faith in our ability to cope. We lacked faith in our actual perceptions of things. In the Bible, toward the end of Jesus' life, he started challenging his disciples because he wanted those who were weak to go away. And he wanted those who were strong to become more strongly centered, because he knew what was going to happen. He didn't want the disciples who were weak to disappear, but he needed to have a core of people who were very strong, because once he wasn't there, he wouldn't be there to sustain them. So he started saying things like, I love this, is the way it's written in the Bible, eat my body and drink my blood. Nowadays, you know, we have all the dogma that says, well, he was referring to the wine and the bread, and this is the communion, and that's what he meant. But there was no church to explain it, and quite frankly, that isn't what he meant. His body was the infinite Om. His blood was the Christ consciousness, and he meant you must take into yourself the consciousness that I have. That's what he was really saying. But he said, eat my body and drink my blood. And in the Bible it says, the disciples said one to another, this is a hard teaching. Meaning, the man's lost his mind. He was making sense, you know, being a very reasonable rabbi, and now all of a sudden he's saying, eat my body and drink my blood. He wasn't explaining it. He was just making this incomprehensible statement. Swami tells us that Master often did that. And you have the whole tradition of Zen masters who say incomprehensible things just to break your rational hold and cause you to go into an intuitive level. So Jesus was doing that to his disciples. And it says after that, many walked with him no more. Meaning, he's crazy, I'm not going to be with this guy anymore. Which is what Jesus was trying to accomplish. Those who didn't have the strength to face the crucifixion and the persecution that would come afterwards, they needed to go on. You know, and then they needed to develop in other ways and come back. But here's the point. Because he finally, after many start leaving him, Jesus says to Peter, he says to Peter, are you also going to leave me? Now, when you take all the mystique out of the Bible and just see that man to man, here Peter's been faithfully following Jesus all this time. Many, many things that aren't written in that book must have happened between them. Now many people are leaving, probably people who seemed very close in. So Jesus says, what about you, Peter? It's like this. Peter answers so beautifully. He says, where would I go? Where would I go, Lord? Now what Peter was saying there is not, oh, I understand completely what you're saying. It's an intuitive statement and it refers to these levels of consciousness and I don't have any problem with it. I don't know what they're, he didn't say any of that. He said, where would I go? Meaning, I don't have the foggiest idea what you're saying right now, but I have experienced who you are, and this is my place. I belong to you, and I will not waver from that. You see, what Peter had faith in was himself and his own intuitive perception. He knew what he had experienced, and it didn't matter if he didn't know what was coming next. He knew what he was had experienced, and he would stand by it. And that's why Jesus said, that's when Jesus said, thou art Peter, which means the rock. And upon this rock of your faith in your intuition, I can build the temple of divine consciousness. Most of our fears are that we know we've perceived something and we don't have the faith in ourselves to stand by the truth as we've seen it. And that's why you have to do sadhana. That's why you have to be with people who reinforce your personal strength. Not take it away from you, but reinforce it. And that's why you need to give, so that you begin to have confidence in your own ability to tune into what you know is true and to act on it. You see? Because it's all about self-realization is where it comes down to. Okay? And that's the only basis for courage. Everything else is a fool's paradise and a house built on sand. And if you're lucky and have a lot of energy, you can hang around for a while and then sooner or later... So you might as well go straight to the solid rock and build from there. So, is there anything else that we need to talk about, or have we covered it? All right. Thank you all for coming.